Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good snap. Kicks it out of there. High, booming, twisting kick. Bouvier watches it sail over his head at the 10. It's going to go inside the 5, and Drew Hartlob will down it at the 2-yard line, at the 1. Great job, not only by Gilligan, but by Drew Hartlob, who might be the fastest guy in this team, and he tracked that ball down and downed it at the 1. Hamler's got it far side. Hamler 40, 35, 30. KJ 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Down inside the 5. And finally taken down at the 1-yard line in the Del Grosso Sauce red zone. Point blank, first and goal at the 1. First and goal at the 1. Sanders to the right of McSorley. Wing left. Two receivers near side. McSorley throws in the end zone. He's got Bowers. Touchdown. Penn State, Trace McSorley to Nick Bowers. And the Nittany Lions are on the board. The backfield for McSorley. Trips near side. From the 1. Slade in motion away from us. McSorley keeps it up the middle. Touchdown. Penn State. The Nittany Lions are climbing back in it. Slade to the left of McSorley. They rush 4. Back. Steps up. Looks to make a play. Fires downfield. First down. Dotson 50. 45 in Kentucky. And Penn State moves the chains, converting a 3rd and 18. McSorley. Play action fake. Back to pass. Got a lot of time. Throws. He's got Freiermuth at the 5. Freiermuth to the goal line. Reaches to the pylon. Touchdown. Penn State. And the Nittany Lions are within a score. Basie will snap it. Waits. Good snap, put down. Kick is up by Pinniger, and the kick by Pinniger is good, and Penn State cuts it down to 27-24 with 4:12 to go in the game. And welcome back to the Citrus Bowl, where today Kentucky holds on and beats Penn State 27-24. Joined now by DeAndre Tompkins in the Penn State locker room, who led Penn State with 4 catches for 74 yards. As that fourth quarter is playing out, did you feel, DeAndre, like you were starting to wear them down?
Yeah, you know, throughout the week, you know, we practice kind of hard, try to get used to the weather and get used to going full speed, you know, all 4 quarters. And we did feel like, you know, we were well-conditioned, working well on all cylinders. And, you know, they were kind of gassed, so we tried to exploit that.
DeAndre, in the first half, it seemed like it was difficult getting into any kind of offensive rhythm.
You know, always the first half, you're trying to figure out the defense, what they're going to do, what wrinkles they have, and especially in bowl games with so much time on, you know, each other. Each team has so much time to dissect and game plan. You know, teams are going to come out with a little bit of wrinkle in their game. So, you know, figuring out that first quarter, trying to figure out what their wrinkles are, what we can get going, and what works, what doesn't work. So it's kind of just game planning and trusting the coaches, play calling.
How difficult was it trying to get open against that secondary?
You know, I believe we have the best wide receiver corps in the nation. So, you know, we got open. You know, they have great players. They have scholarship players just like we do. Their line made plays. But, you know, I felt like our receiver corps did a good job of, you know, battling and getting open with their DBs.
DeAndre, I remember when you came in, it was an interesting time for Penn State. You were an early entry, came in the spring practice. Over the last 38 games you played at Penn State, your team went 31-7. I know it hurts a lot right now, but what kind of comfort do you take in what you've been able to do to put Penn State back on track?
Just to come in such a trying time for this university and this program, and to turn it around with some of the guys that I've came in with, just means a lot and says a lot about each one of our character that we stuck in and dug and tried to do the most we could to bring Penn State back to light. And I truly believe that me and along with the seniors now have done that. So to leave that legacy is something to, you know, take with me and be able to tell, you know, my kids and my kids' kids.
And that was yesterday's Citrus Bowl, where Kentucky led start to finish and won 27-24 in a day where you just saw Penn State wearing them down. And finally, in the end, Kentucky won at 27-24.
The key part and the reason we put the field goal in is it establishes there's 4:12 to go in the game. Penn State had put together three consecutive three and outs defensively and had all three timeouts remaining. That's why I felt good about James Franklin taking the field goal, knowing that the next score would either send it to overtime or would win the game for Penn State. And to Kentucky's credit, they ground out a couple of first downs. And Benny Snell, big reason why, along with their the middle, that center guard combination on the offensive line, grounded out. So a lot to talk about that game, a lot to talk about the football team as well. And we'll do that, especially a lot in the second hour of the show. As today we are in Michigan. Yesterday I was in Orlando. Today I'm in Michigan. And tomorrow's show is in Michigan as well. Today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The Sunbury Motors studio is mobile today. College football playoff. Oh, look, it's Alabama Clemson again. Okay. Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic is going to join us in a few moments. Then Tony Knopp, we're going to talk about how athletic directors feel about expansion of the college football playoff. Then Tony on the corporate side of it. Hey, where the money's coming from. How do they feel about a potential expansion? And then we'll take your calls in the final hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, we'll get into more of Penn State football, obviously, in the next hour of the show. Looking forward to that. College football playoff, Alabama-Clemson coming up on Monday night. It's like Warriors and Cavaliers, like the same story over and over again. But as my good friend Tom McGrath says, hey, look, you got to go out and beat them. You have to go out and beat them. Simple as that. Now, a lot of people are talking about expansion of the college football playoff. With that, we are joined by Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic and also BTN. Nicole, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, you wrote the article last week about the expansion from 4 to 8 and to get comments on what people thought about it. Were there any surprises to you in the interviews that you conducted?
Well, yeah, I mean, I really thought initially, going into this until I started talking to people, that this wouldn't have gotten the type of push, you know, and again, it's informal conversations, hoping to get to that stage to have formal conversations. I thought that would really only have happened if Georgia had gotten into the playoff again and you had a league get multiple teams in again. This year you've also had Notre Dame in the mix, which would have excluded three power conferences. But, you know, it didn't even require that to really get the ball rolling, because there are, you know, 5 years of selections and rankings that people are seeing and frustrated with and ready to start talking about change. So I think just overall I was surprised that that push is coming, even without what I guess people were kind of say like a nightmare scenario, which would have been the two, you know, Alabama, Georgia, and Notre Dame all getting in.
Barry Alvarez has always been a guy that I personally felt can see the big picture, and I'll give everyone a quick example. When they were talking about forming a Big Ten hockey conference, Minnesota had always been in its conference, Wisconsin, Michigan State, they've all been in their conferences. And he said, no, this is best for everybody, so we're going to pull out and we're going to go to the Big Ten. He's always had that kind of perspective. What perspective did he give you, and how rock solid was he in his commentary?
Yeah, I mean, he is very influential in this. He was, you know, member of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee for the first three seasons of its existence. So he knows how hard it is, how it works. And he's obviously been in the Big Ten a very long time and is one of the most respected voices in the conference. So, yeah, when he says something and he says stuff like inevitable, you know, the expansion feels inevitable and everyone's talking about it, everyone's thinking this, I mean, that really does carry a lot of weight. And so I think, I think that's why people reacted so strongly to some of his comments. And also his, you know, kind of, you know, going to bat for UCF, I don't think, people expected that. And he did that unprompted to me. So, you know, I do think, people recognize that he is influential, particularly in this specific case, because he was involved in it and made those selections and helped determine which of those four teams went to the playoff to begin with. So, you know, it's certainly important, and, he feels very strongly about it. And when Barry Alvarez feels strongly about something, you're going to hear about it.
Yeah, and he will look at the big picture. Now, when you looked at this, you mentioned UCF. That's certainly a factor. Two conference champions being left out, that's also a factor, but also the heavy Southeastern Conference, or the heavy, excuse me, not Southeastern Conference, the heavy Southeast influence on this through 5 years. What kind of order would you put that in that concerns people the most after the interviews and the people you talk to?
Well, I think it's the big picture thing, it's the two things that people are focusing on are the lack of, I guess, respect for conference champions. I think that, you know, when these compromises and conversations were happening to create the 14 fields, you know, there was a lot of push from conference commissioners that conference champions needed to be valued a certain way, you know, and it's listed in the criteria, but it is not, it is basically listed to be used in cases of tiebreakers or when teams are really close and you're comparing them. And, you know, the people, there are prominent people in the Big 12 and the Big 10 that don't think that's necessarily how it's been applied. And I think, you know, you see that even this year with Georgia ranked ahead of Ohio State not being a champion, ahead of Ohio State, the Big 10 champion, 5-6 in the rankings this year, you see that too, and it remains a concern. And then, you know, the other piece of that is strength of schedule. I mean, if you look at the three conferences that have been left out multiple times, those are the three that play 9 conference games. You have conferences like the Big Ten that really try to reduce the amount of FCS teams that their teams schedule. And so you see frustration that doesn't seem to help its teams. And in all three of those leagues, you know, you've had two lost champions that, you know, have had cases to be made and can't get into the playoff. And then, you know, it's still the clearest way to get to the playoff is that you go undefeated or have just one loss. And, you know, it's easier to do that when you're playing less conference games because of the familiarity there. And so, you know, those are the two sticking points that I heard a lot from a lot of different people. And then, you know, I think UCF comes into play when people are, like Barry Alvarez, are thinking about the potential format for what the expanded playoff could look like, because I don't think you would necessarily have people like Barry Alvarez supporting, you know, an 8-team model that includes a group of 5 champion spot designated if you didn't have a team like UCF really kind of, you know, making people think about the group of 5 and the really talented teams that can come out of there a certain way over the last 2 years.
Obviously, the two conferences that have 8, that play 8 conference games have been in all 5. You mentioned the 9 conference games that are played in the Pac-12, the Big 12, and the Big 10, and how there's been a rotation of missing out. But there's another part, too, about non-conference. I got the impression early on that non-conference was supposed to mean something. With Washington got in 2 years ago, and their toughest non-conference opponent was Rutgers, what kind of message do you think that sent to everyone?
Right, that did send a message. And again, it's that the teams that thought these things were going to matter are not being rewarded when they do challenge each other or themselves, and they do see teams that are not challenging themselves in the part of the schedule they can control, like the non-conference, you know, be rewarded for that. Because, again, the easiest way to get in still is to be undefeated or one loss, which isn't all that different from the BCS system, where, you know, it was way more damaging to lose than it was to play a tough team. And so, you know, you see that, and you see it in a way that's different than when we talk about the College Basketball Selection Committee, because they're actually able to reward and incentivize scheduling because they adhere to it. And they literally leave people out who don't schedule a certain way. And they, when they talk about seeding and bracketing, they go through all of this, they explain that this team is on this seed line because of this reason for their scheduling. And they actually incentivize going on the road, playing tough opponents, playing neutral site games. It's built into the formula, and it's the way that they can communicate with coaches and athletic directors. The College Football Playoff hasn't done that because they can say all they want about strength of schedule, but their actions are not showing that they are rewarding or looking at a two-loss champion that had a more challenging schedule over a one-loss non-champion or an undefeated non-champion because of the way that they're not pointing out and actually adhering to different strength of schedule measures. They could do that. They could signal that. They could explain it as the rationale for including, you know, a two-loss conference champ from the Big Ten over Alabama last year. You could do things like that, but they haven't done them yet. So therefore, you know, they're really not sending the signals that people expected, and people tried to schedule a certain way in order to anticipate that it would be rewarded for challenging yourself, and it's not happened. So that is a big frustration for people. you know, across the board and across those three conferences that, A, already have a tougher conference schedule, and, B, when you're trying to limit FCS opponents or require at least one Power 5 opponent in non-conference, that's only really hurting you because you're going to have another loss on your resume, and it's not necessarily hurting teams that are scheduling that. And multiple people pointed out Florida to me this year, which had two FCS wins on their schedule, right, and they still got into a New Year's Six Bowl over Penn State, over Washington State. And, you know, that just speaks to all of this, that playing FCS, playing eight conference games, these things are not being held against the teams that are doing it.
Alabama's last non-conference road game was Penn State in 2011. Just for a point of fact, I know Bill Hancock gave you the standard answer about the college football playoff. I read it. I saw it. If I'm sitting in his position, I give you the exact same answer because that's the position I'm sitting in. Did you get any indication from anybody as to when they would like to revisit this, because this is a 12-year deal?
Right. The people who I spoke to, both on the record and on background, they do want this to be a conversation soon. They want it to get to the point of formal conversations, get it on the agenda, have the right people in the right rooms discussing it, and they want that to happen before the end of the 12-year contract, which is up in 2026. So, you know, people are kind of focusing on 2020 as the midpoint of the deal, and the fact that, you know, all of the semifinals and their contracts, like the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl, all would have cycled through two times by then. That's really soon. And, you know, these conversations take a long time to get to that point where you can make changes. As we know with the playoff, it took years to get to the point where they even got to the four-team format. So, you know, I just think essentially right now there's informal conversations happening all over, and they want it to get to formal conversations. But yeah, they do not want to wait until 2026 to make a change here. So it's going to be interesting, you know, to follow this over the coming weeks and months to see, you know, if that push can get to the point of formal conversation soon.
I know you have to get going, but I just want to slip in one more question. I had somebody on that does a lot of work with the business of sports. College football right now, according to him, is a hot, hot buy. And the corporate partners he deals with would really love to see the move from 4 to 8. Does money eventually play a role in some of these decisions?
Oh, I think money definitely does. And, you know, that's part of why it's frustrating for these power conferences to be left out of the, you know, their slice of the pie multiple times. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's going to factor into this. I'm sure that, you know, the power brokers of the sport, they, you know, have talked to people about that and what this could be worth. I think, you know, there's a reason that fans responded to the idea of an expanded playoff the way they did last week, because there is a lot of interest in it. And I think, you know, the people who can make this decision ultimately, they do realize that, and they do know that this could be lucrative. This could, you know, be just a different system and a good system for them. And fans want it, and maybe TV partners want it. If you have, you know, potentially on-campus quarterfinals, that would be, you know, obviously sellouts. And a lot of attention. So I think there's a lot of pros to this, and I think that the people who are going to be ultimately, you know, trying to force this conversation and have those compromises and debates and, you know, discussions are, you know, thinking about all of those things, especially including the money.
Yeah, the on-campus things, the Chuck Ninus part. But I know you've got to get running. I appreciate the time you gave us today. Happy holidays to you and yours.
All right, thanks. Happy holidays to you, too.
Nicole Auerbach, Athletic BTN. Next half hour, the corporate side of a college football playoff and the money. Tony Knopp, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. All right, college football playoff championship game Monday night, Santa Clara. It's going to be Clemson and Alabama. One was a semifinal, and the others have been championship games. So it's the third title game and the fourth time they've met in the college football playoff. It's like Warriors and Cavaliers. Okay. So we've heard from Nicole Auerbach about how some athletic directors and some conference commissioners feel about expanding the college football playoff from 4 to 8. Now let's get the money side of it, because that is going to play a critical role in it. And whenever that happens, we always turn to California and our great friend, Tony Knopp. Tony, great to have you with us. A, how hot a buy is college football right now, and how do the corporate partners feel about a potential expansion down the road from 4 to 8?
They can't get enough money into college football right now. I mean, when you're talking about baseball's dropping off and losing some sponsors and losing some attendance, and you're talking about, you know, the rise of the MLS and the NFL trying to maintain its perch atop, you know, everything. What gets lost in the shuffle amongst the corporate sponsors is college football. And college football is as healthy as it's ever been. And not only is it as healthy as it's ever been, it's actually a little bit in the Stone Age still in the way that it's run on the business side. So there are sponsors lining up to get involved, even with conferences that are struggling. You know, the Pac-12 conference out here is not doing well. They are not getting the national coverage they need. They're not on the big channels enough. The Pac-12 network's basically been an abject failure, and they signed up 7 new sponsors last week. So there is a lot of pressure from the sponsors. There's a lot of pressure from the major players to drive more teams in the college football playoff. Let me give you a quick example that the listeners might find interesting. One of our major sponsors is Dr. Pepper Snapple Group, or one of our major customers, and they're a major sponsor of the CFP and of the SEC championship game. And, you know, they've got a lot riding on the teams that make that game and planning around them. And so they were objectively rooting for Alabama when they were playing LSU 2 weeks ago, because a lot of the plans they have to make are in advance, and they have to plan around the favorites. If you expand the field so now we can get 2 SEC teams in and maybe 2 teams from other conferences, it makes it easier for them to plan, and they're the ones writing the checks. So it's not an if, it's a when, and it's not a is it going to be 6 teams, it's is it going to be 8 or 16 teams.
Wow, it's either 8 or 16, it's not 6.
It's going to be 8 or 16. Yeah, I think we're eventually going to end up at 16. I really do.
Okay, so that brings to the next part. As an entity, they have money. Money can then exert pressure. Are the people you talk with, are they in the mood to put pressure, and do they have the ability to put pressure?
They have some ability. You know, the interesting thing about football, as opposed to college football, as opposed to some of the other sports, is it's so broken out. There's so many different power brokers that really there's not a central entity to put a lot of pressure on, which makes it more difficult to get what you want. We talk a lot about how dollars and cents drive more than people think. Like, for instance, why would Kevin Durant go to the Warriors? Well, because Nike gave him a massive check to do that, because the Warriors were a billboard for Under Armour at the time. You had a singular place to put pressure and a singular place to take your money and pressure that. You don't really have that in college football. You have all these different conferences that are working together, but they're always threatening one another, and they're making different dollars, right? If you're the Big Ten, you know, you've got a pretty good network going that's making you money, that's getting you the exposure. If you're the SEC, you've got a wonderful deal with CBS. If you're the Pac-12, you're a little weak right now. If you're the ACC, you're a little weak right now. So they'll want to put pressure on, but who do they put the pressure on? They can only put it on the conferences.
Right. Well, can they put it on, because the college football playoff
is a separate business entity. They are the College Football Playoff Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to target them, or is it something where they absolutely need conference approval to do it?
I think they need conference approval because they're, you know, you're going to water down the bowl games even more when you expand to 6, 8, 16. I think it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to go there and that it's going to come from the corporate dollars and where those corporate dollars want to put their money. Just because if you look at the sponsorship rates of March Madness and how well that does, it's exponentially better than college basketball does throughout the year. Whereas CFP does well, but it doesn't do exponentially better than, you know, every game matters throughout the season. I think they're looking at the money that goes into March Madness and starting to understand that this is something that needs to be expanded.
All right. You mentioned watering down bowl games. There are 40 of them. Last year of the 40, which includes the college football playoff, 39 of them had one thing in common. They all had more than a million viewers.
Yep.
You have a lot of people saying, oh, there are too many bowl games, too many bowl games. But if you're in a business, I mean, I realize attendance-wise it's shaky, but if you're a business, you have to love the million-plus viewers with your logo in the field.
Oh, that's all they're doing. I mean, the reality is most of these sponsors, you can find, if you go and look at the bowl registry for this year, there was a number of them last year that was really interesting. You'll find people who are sponsoring a bowl game that's nowhere close to where their business is, and there are no customers in the area for that business, right? The Bahamas Bowl being sponsored by an auto manufacturer that's in, you know, South Carolina, who's trying to sell to people in Texas. But that's the reality is people are tuning in because gamblers are tuning in because they need something to watch, and it's still live TV. So, you know, we're not far off. It's already happening from basically playing bowl games in what's almost like a studio. I mean, these bowl games are, they're sets, so to speak, for a game to play where you have, you know, anywhere from, I mean, there's bowl games, as you've seen, where there's 3,000 to 14,000 people in the stands, and they're handing out tickets to anybody that'll go. And it doesn't matter. People look at that and say, what a waste, nobody should go, et cetera, et cetera. But the exposure makes sense. The ratings are better than almost anything else on TV at that time. And that'll continue to go. Those bowls don't really care about the CFP, right? They've got a good business going. They've got it figured out. They've got a couple of sponsors here and there that are slapping a logo there. The ones that are really worried about it are the traditional bowls, you know, the Rose, the Cotton, the Orange, et cetera, because what you're doing is you're relegating them year over year. And, you know, they've already been relegated by the CFP. I know they're hoping to continue to have the same pomp and circumstance, but not having the final at one of them has hurt them. And I think you move to 16, you might be relegating a few into what is called a quarterfinal round, and that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yet, if you do that, Tony, let's say there's a quarterfinal round, because that means there would be eight. So let's just go with the eight. Mm-hmm. Okay, now you can, in a rotating basis, put one and done meeting to the Cotton Bowl, one and done meeting to the Peach Bowl, one and done meeting to the Fiesta Bowl, one and done meeting to the Orange Bowl, then a semifinal, one and done meeting to the Sugar and to the Rose. By doing a one and done meeting to the game, wouldn't that be the draw that could then make up for you're not really an also-ran? Because you'd rotate as to get the semifinals and so forth.
Absolutely.
You already have
First of all, I'm a little bit of a homer that I think the Rose Bowl should be the national championship every year.
To be frank with you, Tony, I'm absolutely in agreement with that. I mean, to me, the Rose Bowl should be the national championship game every year, but that's just my opinion.
It's got the most history. It's the best experience. It's everything about it. No, I would 100% agree. And that would bring back some of the values of the bowls that really struggled. You know, the Orange Bowl has really struggled, too, in the last 4 years.
It has.
Really struggled. You know, the Cotton Bowl, if they're not getting a good setup, they don't do well selling tickets. It's not like the only bowl that's really holding itself together, no matter who's in it, is the Rose Bowl. It's selling out every year. But the other bowls are hurt by this. So it would help to have a one-and-done meeting to that. It's just to have your quarterfinal years. You just don't, you know, there's going to be a little bit of a contest between some of the other bowls as to who gets what, when, and where.
What has made college football a hot buy? I mean, you talked about it's a hot buy. The NFL is obvious, but what's made college football a hot buy and a hot commodity, even though Cincinnati and Central Florida are playing in the primetime game on Saturday? You and I both know it's not going to draw anybody.
I'll get to that in a second. College football has become such a hot buy because of the transient nature of sports in general. We've seen a big change in the NFL and the NBA where people are following players, not teams, like they used to. The NFL is still doing well with team affinity, but the NBA is not, and they've moved away from that model, and that's what's made them successful, right? They're marketing the stars, so you can follow your favorite player wherever they're going to go. As we're more and more rooting for laundry, where there is less there's less loyalty to a brand, college football never changes, right? It's always been the case that the kids were only there for 3 to 4 years at most. And it's also something that creates a tribal nature and a local nature for everybody, big market and small. And the brands and the companies, they see that. There's no sport out there. You know, there's not a lot of things I could talk about as an expert on, but I can talk about an expert on the secondary market. I've been there from the very beginning.
Yep.
Nothing fluctuates price like college football. Nothing. When you get LSU, Bama as, you know, a top four team meeting each other, when you get Penn State, Ohio State at the shoe, and, you know, the postseason's on the line, you will see prices that are exorbitantly higher than any other sport will have in any circumstance. I mean, those games will outprice the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series for the first time in 100 years, and they do, and they do it every year. That's why it's so popular. Now, UCF, I was in the same boat, and I actually went to a UCF game last year. Somebody bet me that I would be taken aback by the experience, and it was not what I expected. They have quite a game day experience there. They've got a whole downtown tailgate built out. It's not Big Ten country, but they're building something. But, it's not going to draw.
It's a brand new stadium, too. That stadium's less than 10 years old. Supposedly it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, I can't speak to Cincinnati having any appeal to anybody.
And, I mean, even in Cincinnati, I mean, the Bengals, you know, make people frustrated. But, I mean, Cincinnati Bearcat football's on page 12.
It is. And they had Tommy Tuberville last year, and they still weren't on page 10. I mean, so,
let me get to a Los Angeles part for a moment. What has the Rams' success, and I can't factor in the Chargers at all because they're a non-entity there. I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
What has
mm-hmm.
the Rams' success done to USC?
It hasn't changed that much. USC is a super finicky fan base where the minute the team is eliminated, the crowds drop by 20 to 25%.
Okay.
It hasn't had as much of an effect. And quite honestly, I think people from outside would be a little bit surprised at how little we hear about the Rams in Los Angeles, considering they're one of the best teams in football right now. The game day experience for the Rams is not very good. They need to get into their new stadium relatively quickly. But the bigger story is just going to be what the Chargers end up doing. I mean, the team's 7-2, and they can't get people to they can't sell 25,000 tickets. I mean, Penn State sells 25,000 tickets for the spring game. So it's just been fascinating to watch.
I sense the answer to this is no, but is there any way the Chargers would ever move back to San Diego?
No, they won't. They won't go back. So what people don't understand from the outside, and it's good to hear, San Diego is, you know, because people think California and they think, and careful, I'm going to talk politics here for a second, but they think California and they think it's a very, very blue state. San Diego is actually a very, very red community. And
yes,
they have been notorious that they do not pay for sports facilities. For the Padres to get Petco Park, they almost lost the Padres. There's no way that community is going to vote that through. In fact, they just voted down a ballot measure to convert the Chargers' old stadium into a stadium that could host an MLS team. Instead, what they're going to do is what they call SDSU West, so the San Diego State University Campus West, and they're going to try to expand the stadium there so that it can host an MLS team. Even though you and I both know the next two MLS teams are going to Austin and to Colorado, but or Missouri. That's what they're trying to do down there. There's just no way for the Chargers to go back. And they are lost in Los Angeles. There's no answer in Los Angeles. It's people do not care.
Okay, the Rams are obviously a highly entertaining team. Kansas City's mm-hmm. going to take on the Rams. What was the purpose of putting that game originally in Mexico City in terms of the financial part of it? And what about moving it back to Los Angeles?
Well, the number one problem was the Rams' attendance last year wasn't the best when they made the decision to put those two teams down here this year. So you look at the Rams now, and they're doing pretty well. They're averaging. So what they've done is they've actually cut attendance in the Coliseum by 20,000. They put up tarps. so that they can announce a sellout when it's 75,000 people. And even at that rate, last year they weren't selling out games. So I think the NFL looked at it and said, hey, listen, we got to move. We need to have a game in Mexico City. We need to have two big draws. Let's put the Rams in the, and generally they ship, you know, the Jaguars to places in those situations. Last year was the Raiders. The Rams are just one of those B-side teams right now that they can move around. So they moved them down there. The field, they actually canceled the game yesterday. The rumors had started that they were going to cancel the game 4 or 5 days ago. What's generally happened in the past when they cancel games is they give tickets away for the new game. What the Rams actually did was go and invoice everybody for the game immediately, all their season ticket holders. And it drew a huge backlash because a lot of the season ticket holders have already bought their tickets to Mexico City. And none of the travel is going to be paid back.
Yeah,
and
no,
this is not the first time this has happened. And the guy who sued the league last time was Michael Avenatti, who's making a ton of headlines for himself on the political side now.
Right. Yeah. So far we've worked in Red State and we've worked in Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti. And we've stayed out of trouble.
And so far we've stayed out of trouble. Okay, I know what the NFL wants to do, Tony. They want to, the goal, and Roger Goodell's been open about this, he wants it to be a $25 billion industry. And $25 billion, I believe, is the number he has stated. They're right around $14, $15 billion right now. So obviously the avenue to get there is the international one.
Yep.
So they have some games in London, this game in Mexico. Is the NFL doing a good enough job in the corporate structure of this company, with its sponsors, of making sure that the current markets they have in this country are strong enough to have the games?
I think so. Currently, what they're really leaning on right now is ratings. If you talk to anybody at the NFL, they're going to say ratings, 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 ratings. They almost don't even care about the attendance because what most people don't understand is when you report attendance on the NFL side, you don't report premium attendance. So, and you don't have to count those as sellouts. So, for example, if you're Jerry Jones and you have 300 suites at AT&T Stadium, all of those people in those suites don't get accounted towards a sellout or not, and they don't get accounted towards attendance or not. So the number, the attendance numbers are relatively wonky when you're talking to sponsors, but what they are talking about is ratings. And the NFL is all 10 of the highest rating events on television every year, know that. So what they're trying to do is find a way for a soft landing into London and Mexico City. London makes a lot of sense because Khan owns the team over there already, Fulham, the soccer club. And he has put in a bid to buy Wembley, which he's pulled out of in the last month, but nobody actually believes he's pulling out of that bid. The belief is that he's eventually going to buy Wembley Stadium, and it's going to be somewhere
that
the Jaguars can play.
Negotiating ploy, actually.
What's that?
I thought that was a negotiating ploy by him,
all the way.
Actually.
100%. 100% a negotiating play. So I think that's where the soft landing is going to be. I think they're doing a pretty good job with their corporate sponsors about getting that traction. The difference is it's just doing business with corporate partners in Europe is so much different than it is with American and North American sponsors. The NBA has done a really good job of integrating the European basketball leagues. And eventually those will, I think we'll see them grow the way the UFC has grown, where they actually acquire other leagues. If I had to bet, I think that's what's going to happen. They're going to have the G League here. They're going to have developmental leagues in Europe, which are eventually going to roll into, you know, professional clubs. So that's where I think we're headed. The NFL's battle is there are no clubs that have really any reach whatsoever in Europe or in Mexico, and they're going to try to plant them there.
Right. And, yeah, you mentioned the G League and so forth. I mean, that's almost like the next avenue where you can have your control over your own professional minor league and sell it as if it's a pathway to big league. Maybe the Alliance of American Football is that.
Maybe. You know, you've got that, and you've got the XFL coming as well. So you're going to have, you know, competition, so to speak, here in the States. But these are minor leagues that are playing at a different time than the NFL, and it's not expanding. So you have a saturated market that you're just trying to catch on to, you know, the sides of, as opposed to, and I mean, things like the USFL, remember that back in the 80s. But it's a little bit different when you're talking about European expansion and South American or Central American expansion.
Now, obviously, coming up, Phil and Tiger's a pay-per-view event. We know when Mayweather fights, it's always pay-per-view. That's the way most big boxing matches are. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realize, like, this weekend's Iowa State-Texas games on Longhorn Network. In the agreement, Oklahoma is allowed to do one pay-per-view game a year.
Mm-hmm.
And this year was against Army. Is that a potential avenue down the road, and how would corporate sponsors react to a single pay-per-view event for a football game in a year?
I think corporate sponsors will revolt against it, to be totally honest, and here's why.
I agree.
It's about reach. Yep. I'll use the example I mentioned earlier, a good segue back to what we were talking about. The Pac-12 network, for example, is considered a relatively healthy regional network, but it's not really. Compared to the Big 12 or the Big 10 network, it's peanuts. They get about 20 million reach. When you're talking about a primetime game between Oregon and Washington, you get about 20 million viewers, tops, right? If you're playing that game on a Fox affiliate or on an ESPN affiliate, not even in prime time, you're getting 80 million eyes, right? And we're talking about games that are, you know, a lot less appealing to people to watch. You know, Fresno State versus Boise State, games like that generally do fairly well. So when you're trying, when you're taking that inventory and you're moving it behind a paywall, now what we're doing is we're taking what the corporations are trying to sell to in a demographic, and you're slicing that demographic by three quarters, right? If I'm trying to sell toilet paper to middle market and below, to the middle class and below, now I'm not going to even try to advertise with that game because they're not going to buy that game. They can't. They don't have the disposable income. My entire value prop is my toilet paper is 8 cents cheaper than the next guy's.
Right.
So it's going to be a real problem, especially when you start talking about the traditional sponsors and the traditional partners.
And the final part, Tony, with all the fires out there, in what effect and how close has it been getting to you guys? Because obviously, I mean, my concern would be about you, your family, your employees.
It was 160 yards from our home. It was right there. And it burned in the parking lot of our office. Everybody was out in time. You know, it is the precision with which they figured these things out is quite incredible. They reached out to us at 6 o'clock on Thursday night saying there is a fire 11 miles away that our model show could be on you guys within 3 hours. You need to leave now. And everybody did. There's no hesitation around that. And the fire was there within 3 hours. Their precision is amazing. They're heroes. They know what they're doing. So everybody's safe. Everybody's healthy. I really appreciate that.
Tony Knopp from California on the corporate side of the college football playoff. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Back from Ann Arbor next hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.